When your furnace quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win a BBB Torch Award for ethics and be recognized as Lennox's Partner of the Year in 2024. So call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com when you need a company you can trust.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
After so many years of unceasing war and endless danger, today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity.
And that was Donald Trump, not recently, but on the 13th of October, 2025, in an address to the Knesset. And it's an important date, and that speech is an important aspect of a new book, which is called Genocide, Sponsoring the Destruction of Palestine. And it's written by Fintan Drury, and it's a companion piece to his original book about Gaza and Palestine, which was called Catastrophe, Nakba 2. Fintan is with me now in studio. Fintan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You say this book is written through the prism of that date. Explain.
It was just a few days after that speech was delivered to the Knesset that I was doing some further research on what I was hoping to do, which was to look in more detail at the West's complicity and, in some cases, the sponsorship of the genocide, and which I had referred to in a little bit of detail in the first book, but which I really wanted to investigate more thoroughly. And I came across a news report. I had known of Trump's trip on the 13th of October, but I came across a news report that had a number of clips, or a number of quotes from his speech, including the one that you've just played. And you know, I'm a cynical old hack. I was stunned. I was stunned even by his standards, by the language. I was stunned by the inappropriateness of it, given that he was in close proximity to Gaza, where there were 60 billion tons of rubble and you know, at least 100,000 people dead already. And that, yet again, yes, this was a peace, in inverted commas, plan that he was bringing forward, that the President of the United States was bringing forward, and every single President of the United States that has attempted to do so has done so through the prism of Israel and through Israel's interests and has been fronted by Israel's interests. But as I read more, I realized that actually this was different. This was completely different, because essentially what he was doing was airbrushing, in his speech, he was airbrushing out the Palestinians. There is one reference in his 1 hour and 4 minutes of speech, of his speech in the Knesset. There is one reference to the Palestinian people where he refers to the need for them to lay down their arms as if they're the sole aggressor and the sole combatant here. And lay down their arms. And if they embrace peace, they can look forward to a return to the basics of life. Meantime, throughout his speech, he refers to a new economic boon in Gaza, billions and billions of dollars coming in from the United States, from rich Arab states, to support the rebuilding of Gaza. And he portrays Gaza in the future, similarly to what he had done when he was first in office, where he talked about the potential for a Riviera of the Middle East.
Now, some people might quibble with your title, Genocide, but you offer compelling evidence that that's exactly what's been going on.
I think it's reasonable to quibble with it, in the sense that it is a definite point being made in the title. The decision was made after consultation with the publishers, because what we wanted to do was be accurate in the title of the book. And those who quibble say, but there has been no such legal ruling, and there hasn't been, because as everybody knows, to get to a point where there can be a definitive ruling on genocide takes many years. But what there has been is a decision by the court that there is a plausible case of genocide. That, plus the manner in which Trump on that day and others, not just in the United States, but other leaders, have talked up the future of a greater and bigger Israel, gave us confidence that this was something that was appropriate and accurate. And I do think the point is that throughout his speech, as you will have seen from reading it, I'm sure, is that he refers to, he essentially tells the Israelis that today is a day to celebrate. You know, he talks about winning. He talks about victory. He talks about the new beginning of a bigger and greater Israel.
Now, I want to just quote the Genocide Convention, which was adopted by the UN in 1948. So this is not something new or novel. And it talks about destroying in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial or religious group. A, killing members of that group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of that group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. I mean, pretty much on all of those counts.
Francesca Albanese parses that and essentially says there are six grounds on which genocide, and you only need to be found guilty under one. And she says there is no doubt in her case, in her judgment, that Israel is guilty of five of the six.
Now, the question of how Israel gets away with it is one of your principal themes, that they have acted with impunity. And I've been saying on this program that the cloak of the Holocaust has been used, if you like, as a defense shield.
It's used as a defense shield. It's been said by many former senior members of Israeli governments, and not just of the Labour Party, which was a more left-leaning, more moderate Israeli political party that still exists, but pretty much in the wilderness now. But at a time when they were in power, or they were at least a substantial feature of opposition politics in Israel, there were many of its members who tried to make the distinction between anti-Semitism and being anti-Israel. And that's been lost. It's completely gone in the last 20 years. And we have been sucked into that. It's part of Israel's propaganda machine, the Hasbara, as they call it. They're spending unimaginable.
And yet there are many eminent Jewish people who actually insist on making the distinction.
The Jerusalem Declaration of 2021 was an effort by 300 Jewish academics around the world, but many of them in Israel, to actually ask to establish definitively that there is no link. And it's very clear. It states, for example, that it is not anti-Semitic to support the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. It is not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel for its conduct in Palestine, among other things. So these, and it's now garnered, I think, over 1,000 signatories, most of whom are Jewish.
Now, the question of complicity, some people some countries by staying silent are perhaps complicit. Others are more directly involved. I mean, how much of this is about trade? How much of this is about the arms trade specifically?
I think in terms of the sponsorship element, those who are most guilty, the United States, the UK and Germany, and I focus on the United States and the UK, not Germany, because the way I do my work, I can't research in detail on Germany because I don't speak the language, I can't read German newspapers, etc. But in those markets, the arms trade is a huge part of this. And should not be underestimated. And in the case of the United States, it's just a very, very significant dimension. I mean, the United States has provided armaments in excess of $21 billion.
Well, you saw J.D. Vance reminding Israeli cabinet ministers who's buttering their bread.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what he meant. But also, in terms of the complicity piece, the third states, who are those that are hiding behind, if you like, a veneer of support for the Palestinian people, but not taking relatively simple steps. And I'm thinking of Ireland, and I'm thinking of the Occupied Territories Bill in particular, but other areas of Irish life as well, where we could very easily take practical steps that might hurt us a little bit. If we take the economic piece, I don't believe for a moment, given that we're the second largest importer of goods from the state of Israel in the world, I don't believe...
Who's the biggest, by the way? Because you have a figure dating from 2024, I think it was, where we were the largest at that point. in the book, early in the book. But I mean, so what are we importing?
Oh, we're importing largely it's tech, and it's pieces, and it's one American company that is having them made there, brought in here, and then obviously shipped out.
And their pharmaceuticals as well.
No, and pharmaceuticals, yeah. But the point is, if we even park that and say, well, why don't we just target aggressively the occupied territories piece, where we're saying definitively, as a government, as a state, as a people, we will not do trade with Israeli companies that are manufacturing or providing services from territory that we know to be, under UN legislation, under international law, we know to be taking place on stolen land.
Now, you write that the West's international conscience has gone AWOL.
Yeah.
Now, why? I mean, because if they see what Israel was doing, if it was another country, they might take a different view. You know, they would be more ready to criticize. What is it about Israel? I mean, is it this so-called Western values that Israel, uniquely in the Middle East, is supposed to
assume? So I think there's a number of reasons, and I think many journalists are guilty of this. And Bob Fisk, who you would have known well, often spoke about the anti-Semitism piece. And he said that the problem for many journalists, and he included himself in this, is that there is a fear that if you tell the truth about Israel, you'll be accused of being an anti-Semite. That's one reason, because it applies to more than journalists, clearly. The second reason is the one you've just raised, Iran. I said in the first book that Israel would play the Iran card, that they always play the Iran card. They did in the summer of 2024. They went in. This summer, they didn't, the summer just gone rather, summer 2025, they didn't have to go in. Trump went in for them. He went in first. And then they piggybacked on Trump. And the reason why? The reason is, oh, Iran is a nuclear threat. Well, it's not. It doesn't have nuclear weapons. Who does? Israel. But this notion that we have that it is a bulwark against our civilization, in some way that our civilization is superior, and it's a bulwark against the threat of Iran militarily, but it's also a bulwark against Islamism, which we see as this, you know, extraordinary threat, or it's that's how it's presented to us. So it's a combination of things, Pat.
Now, the question of overreach by Netanyahu, I mean, we had unprecedented criticism of Netanyahu by Trump, and even a slightly human aspect, empathic aspect to Trump that you don't normally get. Like, why do you have to kill an apartment block full of people to get one Hamas operative? He asked that question. It's a question we've all been asking many times, but the President of the United States up to this has never asked that simple question.
Yeah, but he flip-flops all the time. So he'd say that. But he did say it. But equally, you know, you could ask the question about how the United States landed a missile in a school in Iran and killed 150, 160 school children. And who are they answerable? To nobody.
Some of the there are questions and comments coming in which are on both sides of the argument. This one, the use of the word genocide to describe the war in Gaza is part of a campaign to demonize the state of Israel and is a vile campaign that began decades ago. When Mary Robinson organized an anti-racism conference in Durban, Israel was being accused of genocide. That was 25 years ago. Bill Clinton has repeatedly stated he was in the room when Arafat and the PLO were offered everything they wanted, but they refused because, in his words, they'd rather kill Jews. It's also an inversion of the historical reality. If Israel had lost any of the wars since their independence of 1948, they would have been annihilated.
Well, Bill Clinton's chief of staff, who was in the room with him, has recently come out for the second time to say that did not happen, and that Bill Clinton, and he has said this again within the last 3 or 4 months, Bill Clinton is, he was asked, did Bill Clinton lie when he said that? And he said, well, let me put it to you this way. He did not give a truthful account of what happened at that meeting. That's been completely debunked. The point about
what I had heard, by the way, is that other forces whispered in Arafat's ear and said, if you agree to this, you're a dead man.
Well,
and that happened at that
caucus. But I mean, I think ultimately, you know, I can't appeal to somebody who believes that Israel is you know, not. There would be people who don't believe it's a genocide. Mm. I accept that. But the idea that Israel has been demonized, Israel has behaved in a manner whereby it should have been demonized to a much greater extent in order that this didn't happen.
Now, the final question is really about Netanyahu's overreach. I mean, we see public opinion in the United States changing. All over Europe, it's changing. There is an antipathy towards Israel that did not exist to the same degree as now in the United States. I mean, is the Netanyahu era coming to an end? And is that likely to bring about a change?
Well, I think one of the startling things about October 13th and the narrative arc that I use of October 13th is the speech of the leader of the opposition that day in the Knesset, which was scary for lots of reasons, most particularly because it was almost completely supportive of everything and anything that the Netanyahu government has done. So I think it's also important to just give you these stats, that 30 years ago in 1995, the year of Yitzhak Rabin's assassination, 29% of Israelis polled described themselves as right-wing. In 2022, a poll by the Israel Democracy Institute found that 62% described themselves as right-wing, with that share of around 70% between 18 and 34-year-olds.
Fenton Drury, the book is called Genocide, subtitled Sponsoring the Destruction of Palestine. It's written by Fenton Drury. And Fenton, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.